This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Don't look now, but you're not alone.
Who's watching me?
More than you know, you're being watched. In big cities, you're under the surveillance of security cameras, so you're almost always on TV and on your computer, your smartphone. Even to a certain degree, when you record and play back on your DVR, someone is watching you, or more precisely, keeping track of what you're doing. Our digital lives are quickly becoming unbelievably enormous heaps of data.
I'm just an average man with an average life. I work from 9 to 5. Hey, hell, I pay the price.
We all know that when we use our digital devices, we're also sending and collecting data as a kind of trade-off for the convenience these tools provide. Want to search for something? We don't care if Google knows. Want to ask Siri a question? Well, she's not real, and who at Apple has time to listen in? But privacy, what's left of it, is complex and personal, and many of us don't know just how much data is being collected on us or how it's being used. And even if we trust those collecting this information, how do we know, how do they know it will remain in safe hands and used responsibly? In short, we don't. But the good news is that there are ways you can control the data being collected, and we're going to talk about that with Ted Claypoole. Ted, along with Teresa Payton, has written Privacy in the Age of Big Data, Recognizing Threats, Defending Your Rights, and Protecting Your Family. Ted is an attorney and senior partner at Womble Carlyle Sandridge and Rice's Intellectual Property Practice Group. This is his second book with Teresa Payton and his second visit to our program. Welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
I just want to point out the obvious here, and that is that your co-author, Teresa Payton, was on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart to talk about this book, and you are stuck with me.
Very, very happily.
How did that happen?
Well, first of all, Teresa looks a lot better than I do. So she gets the TV spots and I get the radio spots.
Now, I don't want to talk a lot about Jon Stewart, but he does a masterful job of taking a very short interview segment and really getting to the grist of whatever the book is about or whatever the visiting guest is about. How would you assess what he did with this book, and why did he choose this book?
I have actually no idea why he chose this book, mm-hmm. although, he did talk about how privacy in general is the real conversation of our age. The one big thing that is happening in our society that we, we're watching it, but we're not really affecting it. Mm. That we're having conversations about it, but we're not doing anything about it.
Do we care?
Well, and that's a really big question. I think a lot of people don't care as much as they say they do, because if we cared more, we would be sending texts to our congressmen and our state representatives and try and get something passed. I mean, the last major federal broad privacy bill that was passed was in 1988. I mean, there are things that have happened since then, like the internet, for example.
Yes, well, it's kind of ridiculous when you think about it. But on the other hand, it would be impossible. You're a lawyer. It would be impossible, would it not, for the law, for the legal system to keep up with technological advances?
Well, it's not a question of keeping up. The law always tries to affect technological advances and sort of and see how they work with society and affect how it works with society. The question is, do they do it 10 years late, 20 years late, uh-huh. 40 years late, or 2 years late? Because after a couple years, you can often see where the technology is going.
Other guests who have talked about computers and technology and privacy issues and our use of the internet and our posting on social media websites have alluded to the fact that the internet is in its Wild West stage. And so those of us who use it, and I think almost everybody does, are participating in the Wild West, where lawlessness is rampant and the sheriff is maybe around the corner, but he's not there when you need him necessarily. How many people do you think have been materially damaged in some way because of either privacy leaks or their data being stolen and misused, be it financial data or private data? How many people – or their computers being taken over by these ransomware viruses? How many people do you think have been damaged by this?
Well, thousands of thousands, probably tens of thousands of people if you add all the things you're talking about together. I mean, there's no question that we do not pay attention to the intrusion in our lives that the computers are causing. And one of the other things about this, and one of the reasons it's the Wild West, is the computers and the internet have allowed us and a way to express certain parts of our personality that wouldn't have been expressed by our parents and our grandparents. And I'm not just talking about the fact that we can get on social media and everybody decides if they were a tree, what kind of tree they would be. I'm talking about the way that we shop online, the things that we look at. I mean, we can be on, 10, 15 hours a day simply looking at things that interest us.
So what you're saying is that many of us will do things that we would not have done in polite society prior to the internet, when we actually had to go to a bricks and mortar place to do it. We'll do it in the privacy of our own home on our own computers and think nothing of it. So what you're saying is that morality is in a way shifting. Personal morality, because if you're talking about porn sites or something like that, we're doing things on the internet that we would have thought twice about in real life. So if our personal realities en masse are shifting, is that part of the reason why we're not as concerned? Because we know that everybody's morality is shifting.
I don't think people think that deeply into it, Mike. I think you're a much deeper thinker than most people are. I think that what's happening I wasn't even talking about our personal moralities in this. I know exactly what you're saying.
But I mean,
I agree with that.
Having an alias on Facebook or doing something on a social media site, saying something maybe under your own name or not under your own name,
right,
under a different name that you would never say as yourself.
Absolutely. And if you're GoBoy123 on some sort of media, that doesn't mean it can't be traced back around. I mean, I personally have some tools like Spokio, for example, that I pay for relatively cheap, not much for a year, but it basically can find, cut through the aliases and find, well, that's, this one's a really interesting one, because most people who sign up for social media have to sign up with an email address. So if you have the same email address, and on one email you're Mike Collins, on one site using that address, and on the other site you're Goat Boy, this will pop up that you have all of these names and addresses.
But how do you get access to that? Because isn't that in the back room of these social media sites where they keep your personal information? Isn't that in the back room? How do you get to the back room?
Well, that's what Spokio can do. That, I mean, there are a number.
Why are they allowed to do that?
Because that really isn't considered a back room point. It's considered something that you have signed up with, and so it's part of your public face is your email. And that may not pop up elsewhere on your Facebook page, but that email is something that Facebook allows the spiders to go pull.
So how much information is being collected on us? By whom? How often? Under what circumstances?
Well, it is constant. When you're online, where you go is being collected. Where you have been is being collected by where you go next, and where you go next is being collected by where you have been.
By whom?
Let's just talk shopping right now. I mean, if you go to the New York Times page and then you pop over to L.L. Bean because you want to buy, clothing item, and then you see something you like and you go to a Hollywood page to read the latest gossip. Each of those things not only is tracking your movements across their site, but they're tracking where you're coming from and where you're going. And the really scary part is that's happening out here in the wet world, too, when you're in the mall.
Yes, I read about this yesterday in the material you supplied. I did not know this. This is really scary stuff. Go ahead.
Right now, a number of retailers are tracking you by your cell phone with your Wi-Fi on. So if you have your Wi-Fi connectivity on your cell phone, that means that the store, the airport,
even if your phone isn't connecting to their Wi-Fi, it's just pinging.
It's just pinging it, so they know where you are.
But do they know who I am? They just know a phone is pinging them.
Right. They can know who you are. They don't necessarily know who you are. But if you go up to the cash register and you pay with a credit card, they can match that traffic pattern.
They can match where you're standing in their store.
Right.
With who is paying with a credit card.
With who is paying with a credit card. And so they can take your name off of that transaction and apply it to where you were throughout the store. And then they don't just want you in their own store. They want to know, if you come from the ice cream place and you always buy something, then, they know to put their stores closer to the ice cream places.
How do they know I've been to the ice cream place?
Because they track you.
But, I mean, they can track you outside of their own
Absolutely.
Store? Absolutely. How do they do that?
All I have is they have other Wi-Fi out there that you're pinging.
And so once you've made a transaction using your credit cards, and then they now have your name, and
Right.
they can attach the name to the address that's the phone is using to ping their Wi-Fi, even
Exactly.
if it's not connecting to their Wi-Fi.
Right.
The next time you come into the store, like a week from now, a month from now, 6 months from now, they know you're there
certainly,
by name?
Certainly could. They certainly could. I can't speak to that.
Okay. Is there an upside to this?
Oh, absolutely.
Is there a downside to this?
on both sides. Well, and it's interesting you ask it that way, Mike, because that's why Teresa and I wrote this book. You've talked to us before. We're not Luddites. We don't think that you should throw all your equipment away. We think that there's very good reasons for almost all of the growth in observation technology in the things that we do. I mean, for example, your car is watching you very carefully. I'm sure we'll get to that later. But when you have a wreck, that means that they can find you.
Well, let's get to that because I'm not sure many people understand that. Even those without GPS, your car knows exactly where you are, and
Right.
others may too. Does it record your movements? Does the GPS system in the dashboard record where you've been?
It can record where you've been, and it can send that recording out.
Under what circumstances does it record and send?
Well, we don't know. That's the question. And let me give you a general discussion that came out in the winter. In the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas this year in December, the senior vice president of marketing for Ford said, we know everybody who's driving a Ford who's breaking the law because we know how fast they're going. Do they record those things? They certainly can.
Why does the car talk to Ford?
Because that's what Ford wants it to do.
Why?
For a number of reasons. Because, as you said earlier, we're becoming into the age of big data. In order for Ford to understand what's going on with its cars, and they would argue to make better cars
Yes.
for you, they need to know what breaks down when and where we all are. So they monitor all of this.
Perhaps GM should know those things too, huh?
They do.
Well, that's the point. We're going to come back and talk more about these cars and what they know about us and what they're doing with our information in a second with Theodore Claypool, Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the City of Charleston Office of Cultural Affairs. Their Piccolo Spoleto Festival has over 500 events, theater, dance, music, and more, now through June 8th. PiccoloSpoleto.com. South Carolina is just right. Well, here in Charlotte, there is a sector of our economy that isn't right. It's participating in a heinous activity, human trafficking. It's a nearly invisible industry that hauls in a staggering $32 billion a year. And in Charlotte alone, there are more than 5 open cases of suspected human trafficking in the Queen City. Now, these people are living as slaves in our own backyards, perhaps next door to us, perhaps in the business that you frequent. Some are involved in just menial labor, forced menial labor. Others involved in sex trafficking. We're going to hear about the fight against all this tomorrow at 9.
On the next Day in Ream show, President Obama outlines America's foreign policy priorities, assessing the president's leadership, and how the U.S. role in the world has changed since he took office.
That's the Diane Rehm Show, coming up next from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded public radio, where 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and we're talking about privacy. Continue, Ted Claypool. We're talking about cars. Ted is the co-author with Teresa Payton of Privacy in the Age of Big Data, Recognizing Threats, Defending Your Rights, and Protecting Your Family. We're talking about cars. Cars with GPS, the ones that are built into the dashboard, maybe not the TomToms or the Garmins, but although right. They probably send information back too.
Most likely, yes.
I don't know whether this is a true story or not, but I once did some live commercials from the Charlotte Auto Show years and years ago when they were first putting OnStar in the GM vehicles. And somebody told me, and I don't know that this is true, that the GM executives, because they're all given cars to drive, when they got their cars, they had their OnStars disabled. Because they didn't want OnStar to know where they were. Now, I don't know, once again, if that's true or not, but OnStar would know where you are. They have to know to be able to make the service that they provide
absolutely
work. But those cars that are not connected to a company, to an automobile dealer or automobile manufacturer's help desk, so to speak, why do those GPSs have to talk back? Why would they talk back? Can we turn the talk back off? Would we want to?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Well, and that's one of the interesting things that happened with GM a few years back is they charge you for OnStar. Mm-hmm. You have to pay like $30 a month to continue the service. Mm-hmm. But when you ask to turn it off, they don't turn it off, or at least they didn't at a certain point. And that were pushed back by the Federal Trade Commission on that, in that when people ask to stop receiving OnStar, they stopped receiving the services that OnStar was providing, but they did not stop being tracked
by
OnStar.
But there are millions of cars on the road. They can't possibly digest the data. And why would they want to? Why would they try? Why would they care the mundane places that we go to work, to home, to the grocery store, to home, to the drugstore, to home? Why would they care?
Well, honestly, on most of that, they probably don't care. On some of that, they will want aggregated data of how much you travel a day, how far from home you might travel a day, because it gives them an idea of how to build their cars, how their tires should last, how many stoplights you stop at.
That's a good thing, isn't it?
Absolutely, and there's no question about that. There's a lot of good reasons that they might have this that will help them improve the products. And as we talked about a little bit earlier, something like OnStar is terrific if you get yourself in trouble. I mean, if you're being attacked, if you have a car accident.
If you're lost.
If you're lost.
Car breaks down.
Absolutely. There's a lot
out
of good reasons for it.
Yeah.
But let's take it to a whole different place in the car, which is the commercials you're seeing for Progressive Insurance. I mean, they're acting like this is what cool people do. Cool people get their little tracking device and let the insurance company then track everywhere you go, what you do, whether you accelerate too fast at lights, whether you brake too hard at lights, and what kind of a driver you are.
I have not seen these commercials. How do they do that?
Oh, their spokesperson, Flo. One of the last ones, she was coming out of an alley saying, are you really going to listen to what those privacy people say, or are you going to do what you really want to do, which is, you know, save money with us by getting this thing that listens into your car all the time?
Well, all cars, even those without the GPS, have a all modern cars have essentially what is a black box, right?
Right, but it doesn't send the information directly to your auto insurance company.
I don't think people know that either. If you have an accident, it monitors and records the last few seconds of your drive. So it knows what speed you were going. It knows how quickly and how forcefully you applied the brakes, whether you turned left, whether you turned right. It knows these things and it records it. How is that information used and where is it stored and can you turn that off?
Well, that's relatively new. No, the short answer is you can't turn it off. And it's relatively new. That information is supposed to be used by insurance companies and in court and by the police to try and build backwards and figure out what happened in an accident. It's really only been implemented for the last couple of years, so we haven't seen it begin to really flow into the general commerce.
So this is different than what Flo at Progressive is
absolutely
talking about. Is Progressive the only company doing this at the moment?
They're the only ones I've seen advertise it.
So they actually want you to get a device to put in your car, and if you get that device, they give you a discount?
They're saying that, well, if you get that device and they find you're a safe driver, you get a discount.
But they'll also know if you are speeding regularly or if
Absolutely.
You accelerate ridiculously.
Well, that's right. I mean, privacy aside, when I look at it, I know how I drive and I know the device is not going to help me.
Yeah.
So they will know. But they also will know where you go.
You know, there was a movie, and I've forgotten the name of it now, with I think it was Tom Cruise years ago, where he walked into a shopping
mall. Minority Report.
Okay. He walked into a shopping mall, and all the screens in the mall began talking to him directly. And they knew what he had bought the last time he was there, and they said, that shirt's getting old. Perhaps you'd like to stop in and get a new, you know, whatever. That's where we're headed, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And we're already there online. In other words, when you go to Amazon – they know what you bought last time. They know what you bought before. And they'll suggest what you should buy next. And that can easily be done out here in the wet world as well.
And people that go and are looking, or maybe they're thinking about buying a new kitchen appliance. They're just thinking. So they're going to go online and they're going to search out these appliances and try to maybe find the best appliance in their price range, whatever it may be. And suddenly they're on unrelated sites doing unrelated work and refrigerator ads start popping up because they've been looking for refrigerators.
Exactly.
That's because of a cookie that has been put on your computer. Is there any way around that? Is that a bad thing? If you're looking for a refrigerator, wouldn't you want to know that it's on sale now at some place?
Right. And sometimes that's what you hear, and sometimes it is just simply more ways to get you to think about refrigerators. So it's not necessarily bad. Because you're going to get served ads anyway online.
Right.
And if you get served ads that are more relevant to your shopping habits, then that's probably a good thing in and of itself. But can you turn it off? Yes, there are methods of turning it off.
Would you want to?
But that's the real question. Because it comes with turning it off comes with a downside too.
And that is?
That a number of sites do not work as well
right.
for you because there are a lot of websites that are very sophisticated and they do track you going through and they serve up the things even internally that you want because they know you want it because every time you come into their page, you go to the sports page.
Right.
So they'll automatically bring up the sports page for you.
So if you use the anonymous browser selection on Firefox
right.
or Chrome, or I think Internet Explorer has it too, and or if you delete your cookies on a regular basis, are you defeating that system? Yeah, they'll track you until you delete the cookies, but then they don't know who you are or they don't know what you've looked for, or is that not true?
That's not true. they have more persistent methods of figuring that out. It's interesting. This is not even online, but we talk about this in the book. There's a very interesting survey that was done, a study by MIT along with a university in Belgium, in which they didn't know anybody's name, but they just took their phone records. And they could take with 30 days of your phone records of just knowing where you were and where you made calls, over 85% of the people, they could actually figure out their names of who they were.
Now, this is concerning, it would seem to me, only if that put you in some sort of danger, or it got you in some sort of trouble that you didn't need to be in. Governments will say, we're collecting this data to keep you safe, to deter terrorism.
Generally, although I've got a very good question, counterfactual for you. Okay. In the Google, you know, which has phenomenal technology, and some of this is very helpful to us, but they came out a while back with a facial recognition technology, and they put it really not even in beta test, just an alpha test, and then they pulled it back, and they said, we're never going to release one of these.
How did it work?
It worked by making comparatives on pictures. And so they could look at a picture of you from your high school yearbook and find pictures of you now and find pictures of you when you're 85. It compared enough facial points that they could it would quickly find pictures of you. But the problem is it would also – you could take the high school yearbook of somebody that's in witness protection.
Ah.
And find where they are.
Is that why they pulled it back?
I believe so. That and the battered spouse issue.
Well, do no harm is the physician's. Do no evil. I think.
Do no evil is Google's thing.
So governments will tell you that they do things to keep you safe, ordinary citizens safe. Businesses will tell you they're collecting this data because they want to be able to serve you better, right, bring you better products, be quicker on discovering what you need. In your last book, you talked about how Target knew, before most friends and family knew, that women were pregnant by the fact that they would buy pregnancy tests or
right,
other products.
Scent-free lotion.
Right. So, I'm not sure what the question is here, but since they're not doing any harm, so to speak, should we be worried? When should we be worried?
No, that's an excellent question. And I flew back here from San Francisco yesterday, and the person that was in the seat with me had seen the book, and her point was that she's not doing anything wrong, so
yes,
why does it matter? And we go through this in the introduction of the book, that there's a lot of reasons that you should be careful on your privacy. I mean, yeah, you're not doing anything wrong, but you probably don't make love wrong and you probably don't go to the bathroom wrong, but it's not that you want everybody on the block to see you or hear you doing any of these things.
Right.
So there's a point of just basic dignity that you want to have a certain part of your life that is yours. But the bigger one from my perspective is an issue of power and coercion. And you saw this in the East German state, which was almost a total surveillance state, that people who are watched, the people that know that their activities are going to be recorded by somebody, they act in ways that they think is going to be okay with the state. Hmm. Rather than acting the way they want to act.
But unless we go out and buy a 1955 Chevrolet or Ford or whatever, or a Dodge, unless we turn off and get rid of our computers, unless we stop using the telephone, the landline, and the cell phone, unless we go back to three channels of television with rabbit ears,
right,
we are in this world. There is no way out of it.
Yes.
This world is completely wired, interactive, and everything is talking to everything else and collecting data on us moment by moment. It isn't just your cell phone. Your computer is watching you. Soon your refrigerator is going to start watching you because it's the Internet of Things is on the way. It's already here in some cases. Every tablet watches you, keeps track of you. As you watch television, if you have a DVR, whether it's from Time Warner or UVerse or somebody else, it knows what you've recorded. It knows when you play it back.
And Verizon has just got a patent on a DVR that actually has a camera
in it
that watches you. Yeah.
Watches you watching television.
Right, because they want to know when your eyes are actually on the screen.
Does it see you or does it see a pattern? I mean, does it actually see a photograph of you that somebody could see you watching television? Or
it could. Certainly it could. But, I mean, what it likely sees is this goes back to the Minority Report thing. What it's supposed to do in that case is watch your eyes and see whether they're focused on the television or not. In other words, when it's running the advertisement, are you watching the ad? You know, how many people are in the room, and are those people watching, or do they have their pads on?
Well, that's kind of here. Xbox Microsoft's Xbox, yep, which does more than play games. It can control your TV. You can say, Xbox, show me the CBS Evening News, exactly, whatever. And it will talk to you and respond to you.
But it knows your face.
And it knows your face. I have a friend who usually wears a baseball cap. Didn't have his cap on. And they asked him, is that you? Put the cap on, and they responded to his. That's, to me, frightening.
Yeah, they know which member of your family is in the room at the time. And a lot of this is scary. One of the things that we talk about at the beginning of the book is the well-known problem at the Lower Merion School District outside Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Lower Merion School District is really known by all of us for two different things. One, it was the high school of Kobe Bryant. and two, they were some of the first people that offered laptops to their kids. And they sent these school-bought laptops home with the students. But at one point, a number of kids complained because they said the camera lights were coming on in their bedrooms. And one kid was actually disciplined because the principal said, well, we saw you on the camera in your bedroom, and we think you are taking drugs, so we're going to suspend you. And this kid said, well, there are Mike and I candies. You should have seen the box that was there, too. And by the way, what the heck are you doing looking into my bedroom? Yeah. And the Lower Merion School District ended up settling with a number of students after admitting that some of their techs were essentially turning on the cameras that the students had taken home. And if you think this is isolated, it's not, because the Federal Trade Commission actually has had a consent decree with a whole number of rent-to-own companies that were doing exactly the same thing, allowing you to rent a laptop computer and then turning on the cameras.
Well, there's that, and there's people who hack in and who can turn your cameras and your microphones, yes, on without you knowing it, because the light doesn't always come on.
Right.
So the question is, are you being paranoid, ridiculously paranoid, if you put a piece of black tape over the lens of the camera on your laptop?
I hope not, because I do it.
You do it.
Yes.
We're all carrying around, most of us who carry around phones, carry around smartphones. They all have cameras. They all have microphones.
Right.
How do we know they're not on right now?
You don't. I had a meeting with a client of mine who is a deep Homeland Security guy, mm-hmm, with the military. And I came, and he had an issue that he was very concerned that the government would be paying undue attention to him. And we met someplace public to talk about it. And he made me take my phone and put it out in the car. So that we didn't have any even potential listening devices there. And that's...
Is that being overly paranoid? Not for him, perhaps, but for ordinary citizens. I mean, you're carrying this around in your pocket.
Right.
And they could certainly turn the mic on and listen. And if you have it on the desk, they could turn the camera on.
Well, the true question is, where do you care? Right. Are you talking about things that are a problem?
All right, we're going to talk about that and about what you can do if you do care. In a moment, Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Business North Carolina magazine, covering the economy, industry, and business of North Carolina each month. June features the state's largest banks and credit unions, with subscriptions online at businessnc.com and at the App Store. President Obama outlines America's foreign policy priorities, assessing the president's leadership and how the U.S. role in the world has changed since he took office, the topic of the conversation in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. If you have digital privacy concerns, maybe you'd like to let them out. Get on your computer. We'll all know what you're talking about before you even hit send. We'll all know it. The government will know it. Your computer manufacturer will know it. WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks is the way to get to us, and we're coming right back.
Charlotte Squawks returns to Booth Playhouse for its 10th edition. Using songs from Broadway, pop, rap, and rock and roll, this musical parody takes aim at pop culture, traffic, politics, and more. WFAE is going behind the scenes for an invited dress rehearsal on Thursday evening, June 5th at 8. Learn how you could join us at WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins.
Every breath you take.
Digital invasion of privacy. I could be wrong. And I don't think they're necessarily singing about that, but
nope. It
certainly fits.
No question.
Ted Claypool is our guest. He, along with Teresa Payton, have written Privacy in the Age of Big Data, Recognizing Threats, Defending Your Rights, and Protecting Your Family. Do we have a right to privacy? You're a lawyer. Do we have a right to privacy? Really?
In some ways, yes. In other ways, no. This country has decided to address privacy in a different way than most of the industrialized world. We address it sector by sector. So you have a right – you actually do have a right to a privacy in your finances. You have a right to privacy in your health care that you receive, although there are a number of loopholes with that. For example, if you give your – DNA sample to your doctor for him or her to help treat you with something, that's definitely private. Mm-hmm. However, if you give your sample to 23andMe to find out information about yourself, that doesn't fall under the healthcare law, so that's not private. Information about children is kept private, and thanks to a very strange anomaly back in the 80s, information about your video rentals are private.
Are they still? Are your Netflix records?
Yes, and it's interesting. It actually fell into that. If you remember where that came from, it was Robert Bork who was pushed on that, and you could see every congressman when that came up thinking, oh my gosh, what if they get my records? And like within 2 weeks, we had a law that said that was private.
So rank these things in importance. The fact that information is being collected without our knowledge, the fact that this information is being stored for an indeterminate amount of time, the fact that this information is being mined to target specific things at us or for us. Which is more troubling to you?
The storage. Definitely the storage.
Why?
Because if you store it, then it can be mined forever for many different things and you don't even know what, and it can be taken from the people that are holding it and used by bad guys or used by the government.
And, we've seen that happen.
Absolutely.
Recently.
Well, no question. You talked about Target earlier. Target had a terrible data breach, and Target is one of the more sophisticated companies at protecting data.
But since we're living in this world where we're all paying with debit and credit cards, we're all carrying around smartphones, we're all using computers, we're all watching television using DVRs, most of us, all of these things are collecting data. We're driving cars. All of these things are reporting back to the mothership.
Right.
What do you do?
Well, it depends. If you care, there's a number of things you can do. You can shut off your car's GPS.
How?
You can ask them. You can simply stop paying and ask them, and at least with GM. And now, unlike several years ago, but now they have to turn it off. And there are things like we were talking earlier about Wi-Fi.
You can turn off
the Bluetooth. You can turn off the Wi-Fi connections. There are four or five ways your phone connects.
And you do this at the airport.
I do, absolutely.
Why do you turn off your Wi-Fi at the airport on your phone? Why?
Because it can be hacked into. What's interesting is it's not just that there are people who know how to do it. There are tools out there that people can buy that make it easy to hack into a phone with Wi-Fi. And if you look at what happened in Target, One of the issues that was very concerning to me in Target was the people that did the hack bought. They didn't know how to hack. They bought the hacking equipment from somebody in Russia. And anybody who knows how to get onto these sites can buy these hacking tools. So it's more prevalent than you think. And one of the reasons is that the hacking tools have become something that you can purchase and they become plug and play.
Some things are being stored by companies and governments. Information, our phone call records, who we call, when we call, where we were, when we made that call. People probably also don't know that when they take a picture with their photograph, with their telephone, or with their with a new digital camera, mm-hmm. that camera is also recording geostationary satellite positions, where
Absolutely.
You were when you took that picture at this time on this day. And that data travels with the picture unless you strip it out.
Right. That's how John McAfee was caught when he was on the run. I mean, here's John McAfee, who is known
for his virus protection.
Right, programs. For virus protection and for being a really savvy tech guy. And he's on the run from the international police. He's hiding in a country that he doesn't have the right to be in. And he meets with journalists and allows them to take his picture. And they post the picture online saying, "We're with John McAfee right now, suckers." And within a couple hours, somebody has figured out how to open up the metadata in that picture and figured out exactly what country he's in.
Well, I want to talk about the cloud, but as long as we're talking about this, in your book, I believe it's in your book, you have a scenario where – I think this is in your book. I read so much yesterday where a person has decided he needs to get out of Dodge.
Right.
And so he gets in his car, he leaves work, he goes home to pack a bag. When he goes home, the house is warm, so he turns up the air conditioning. And he gets a knock on the door, and it's the police because they're already following him, and they tracked his cell phone. And then when he turned on his thermostat, which was connected to the Internet of Things, they knew that somebody was home, so they figured he was home.
Right.
And they went and arrested him. That's not beyond the realm of possibility, is it?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. And that kind of thing happens all the time right now.
Well, we'll come back to that. I want to get back to the storage thing because a lot of us don't know that all this information is being stored or where it's being stored or how it's being stored or by whom it is being stored, but it is. While others of us are using and are being encouraged to store our information in the cloud.
Right.
Either on OneDrive from Microsoft or Google Drive or iCloud from Apple. Be in the cloud so that all of your information is available to all of your devices all of the time, and it's all synchronized. So if you change a document,
it's really cool, isn't it?
It's very cool. Is the cloud safe? Do I want to put my banking files in the cloud? Do I want to put my personal documents, my my last will and testament, my whatever it may be, in the cloud?
Actually, yeah. Well, we've got a whole another show on your last will and testament in the cloud. I mean, there's some real reason to do that. I've been talking about the cloud for 5 or 6 years, ever since it was, or even longer, since it was a concept. And I feel very strongly that people overestimate the risk of bad guys getting at their stuff in the cloud.
Really? Overestimate.
But people didn't believe me until Snowden on this, but that they underestimate the risk of the government getting at your things in the cloud. And the reason for this is you can store things in a number of places. And if your business is storing – I usually talk to businesses. If your business before the cloud, where was your business storing things? Well, it was storing them in the basement.
That's right.
You know, in a server that some guy came and checked every 2 or 3 weeks. But nobody actually ran. And it was connected to the Internet. And it probably didn't have great security on it. So in comparison, if somebody wanted to take your stuff, it was easier to get at it when it's at the server in the basement than it is to get at it if it's in the Googleplex or the Amazonplex, mm-hmm. where they would kind of have to go through you to get it anyway and risk being caught. So in that case, I think it's hard for bad guys to get at things in the cloud, really, because they're dealing with a lot better security. They're dealing with the issue of there's just so much stuff there that it's hard to even find it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's harder for bad guys to get to it. Now, the government, on the other hand, can come into Amazon or Google with a subpoena or a court order of some sort and ask to see your cloud account without you knowing about it. And we didn't really know much about that until the Edward Snowden releases came out. But that's always been my concern, is that if you have something you're worried about the government getting, don't put it in the cloud.
Hmm. Now, my phone, because it's an Android, has nothing to do with that, actually, because I have OneDrive mm-hmm. from Microsoft, I have set the phone up so if I take a picture and I'm connected to Wi-Fi, anything on the camera roll in the camera is sent to the cloud.
Right.
So it's there. I don't have to keep it on the phone. It's there in the cloud.
Yep.
So what is my guarantee that Microsoft or Google or Apple or other people who want you to be part of their cloud service, cloud storage service, aren't mining my information to find out more about me so they can better serve me?
There is no guarantee. But what's interesting about the cloud and the way it works now is you can almost guarantee that if you're getting a free service like that, that's exactly what you're paying. Uh-huh. Is you're not paying in money, you're paying in information. That they are taking your information, they're looking at it, they're crunching it, they're finding out more about you, they're putting it in files, personality aggregate.
So they are reading my personal files? They're looking at my pictures to see where I was?
Google
is. So where is the right to privacy in that?
Well, and that's
where
I'm coming.
They're reading my personal documents.
Right, but this is their exchange. They're giving you this for free.
Is that written someplace as you sign up for the service?
Yes, absolutely.
Does it say in the EULA? It says.
Yep. It talks about what they'll do, and it may not be as clear mm-hmm. as we would all like it to be, but yes, they're fairly upfront about what they're doing. Now, and I use this for business a lot, because businesses frequently will pay for the service, and often when you're paying for the service, you get more privacy. That's somewhat you pay for.
When the government goes to one of these cloud services and asks for information about specific people, do these services tell you that they've been asked by the government to hand over this information, or is it completely opaque? You never know.
Not necessarily will they tell you. Sometimes they're ordered that they on two fronts. One, you have to give up the information, and two, you can't tell the people that we've asked. So in that case, they're not allowed to tell you.
I see.
Other cases, it'll just be a question of their policy.
Eric emails, please talk about data collection whereby the consumer is paid for their data. I believe this is something to come, and if it does, will provide space for more regulation.
Yes, I think that's right. At the moment, though, it's interesting that there are not a whole lot of places that are paying you. Now, one of the places that does pay you is your grocery store. When you use your Vic card
at Harris Teeter
or your Bilo Perks card or Publix, I'm sure has the same thing. That's what you're getting paid for your information. You are telling them exactly what you've bought, whether you pay in cash or you pay in credit card. They still tie it to your account, so they know everything you've bought. They know what coupons you've used. They know what you've done with it, and you get discounts in exchange for that.
And I've decided I don't care.
Right, and most people decide that.
Right.
But I will tell you that there's times that I will buy something that I feel like, no, I'd rather not have the discount. I don't want you knowing that I'm buying this right now.
Yeah. So what can we do? What should we do? What's the basic bottom line rule of thumb? What would you do if you have even an inkling of disturbance about the conversation we've had?
Yes, I think there's a number of things to do. Let's address them one area at a time. Safe surfing. There are a number of tools that you can get that will allow you, and we talk about them in the book, that will allow you to surf a little more safely, to clean up your cookies and to keep your the beacons and the other programs that they watch you with, mm-hmm. To keep those at a minimum, to clear them out frequently. So there's DuckDuckGo, for example, is a...
It's a Google replacement.
Google replacement.
It doesn't track you. Well, they say they don't track
you. Right, exactly. They say they don't track you. And what's interesting is if something like that says they don't track you, this is one area where the government does come in. And the Federal Trade Commission is pretty good about stepping in on people that are lying on their privacy policies.
So duck, duck, go.
Exactly.
The way it sounds is a Google
report. Right, and there are settings on other browsers that you can use, and there are a number of places that we talk about in the book. But there are tools that you can get to help save that. When it comes to your smartphone, there are at least four ways that your smartphone connects to the internet.
Very quickly.
That the phone triangulates, Wi-Fi, GPS, and Bluetooth. And you can shut at least a couple of those off, and it will make you safer.
Okay. Anything else that you would do, that you do right now?
I'm just careful. careful about – sometimes I don't take my phone with me in places where I don't want to be followed.
And are we at the edge of the end of passwords? Are we trying to find something better than passwords, given the fact that they've been hacked a lot recently?
No, it's going to be a long time before we get beyond that.
Theodore Claypool, along with Teresa Payton, have written Privacy in the Age of Big Data, Recognizing Threats, Defending Your Rights, and Protecting Your Family. It is, as John Stewart said, the conversation of our times. Thank you again for the hour. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I leave scared to death.
And I've done my job.